Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, August 7th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for the Medical Monday comes from Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. Joining us this afternoon to answer your breast surgery questions is Dr. Lita Rojas of Caremont Medical Group, and Putnam Hospital Center. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Rojas, your calls and much more are all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. In the studio this afternoon to discuss breast surgery is Dr. Lita Rojas. Dr. Rojas is the director of breast surgery at Caremont Medical Group and Putnam Hospital Center. She's been in practice in New York's Hudson Valley for 24 years and sees patients out of her Carmel and Fishkill offices. She went to New York Medical College and before that to Boston College. Dr. Rojas, welcome to Vox Pop.
Thank you, Ellen. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. You had a nice long ride to get here, and we very much appreciate the effort. Okay, so the phones are already beginning, 1-800-348-2551. But let me ask you, what's new in breast cancer?
Brand new to breast cancer treatment is women who have HER2-positive breast cancer. They now have a new drug that was just approved by the FDA last month. It's called neratinib. And that medication is an oral pill that's taken for treatment for women who have already been diagnosed with breast cancer and have had treatment with another drug called Herceptin. So this drug just was released by the FDA last month, and it allows women to take this medication after they've already been treated for breast cancer, and it's shown promising results with about 33% chance of less recurrence rate.
Well, my memory, of course, isn't very good, but tamoxifen, wasn't that one of the breakthrough drugs also?
Yes. Well, tamoxifen is probably one of the oldest breakthrough drugs, but HER2 new is a protein that's on a cancer cell that is has not been known for a long time. And now they have what we call targeted therapy. So these medications specifically target HER2 cells and inhibit them from growing.
So are these individualized therapies? In other words, does each person have a different cellular problem, or does everybody get the same thing?
Well, for HER2-positive breast cancers, they all get targeted therapy, but that's usually done in conjunction with chemotherapy, and that's where the difference may lie is the type of chemotherapy agents they're given.
Okay. Now, you're a surgeon.
Yes.
But there are also people who, you know, are diagnosticians. What's the difference between what you do and they do?
So when a woman is first diagnosed with breast cancer, that usually happens either in radiology or in a breast surgeon's office. And once that diagnosis is made, that's when the whole team comes into play. It's not that often where a medical oncologist would see a patient because they need to have the diagnosis before they're seen by the medical oncologist.
Do you do many operations? I mean, how many operations do you do?
I do a lot of operations. I have been practicing breast surgery for the past 24 years, but have concentrated in breast surgery in the last 3 years and do several hundred cases a year.
Wow. And so it's not unusual to do more than one in a day?
No, not at all. Not at all. We have what we call block time in the operating room so that we have specific days and we can plan our surgeries accordingly. And somewhere between 4 or 5 cases we'll do in that time period.
What's the recovery rate for somebody who's been diagnosed with breast cancer?
Well, that depends on the stage. So you can have recovery of stage 0 up to 100%, stage 1 maybe 95 to 98%, stage 2 high 80s to low 90s, yeah. And so it's constantly improving.
Yeah. What are the telltale signs of breast cancer that a woman should look for?
Well, we hope that women don't find those telltale signs on themselves, and our goal is to have these diagnoses made by screening mammograms or ultrasounds or even MRIs for patients who are high risk.
How would a woman know to go get an MRI?
So that's an MRI is not part of routine screening. It's for women who are high risk, and that high risk is usually an assessment that's done by their physician, and they do an algorithm based on multiple factors, and they come up with a risk.
Familial, for example.
Familial, first time they got their period, when they went into menopause, if they ever had children, family history, and also recently now we've added density to the breasts, which also is a risk factor.
So you say first time a woman had her period. I never heard that before. What does that mean?
So what we're looking for is women who are in the highest risk is how long they've gone without full development of their breast. So a woman's breast starts to develop when they first get their period. That's the first menses. And it continues until they actually have their first child. So that's why you may have heard that women who don't have children at a higher risk, it's because of the breast development never is completed in those women.
Oh, you mean, I am so naive about this, but when they have a child, when a woman has a child, that puts a stop to the growth of the breast?
To the development of the breast, correct.
Hmm. Okay, let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Okay, Jim, what do you got?
Other than adenomas, adenocarcinomas, and mixed mammary tumors, are there other types of tumors that you deal with?
Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling in. Yes, there are. The most common is the invasive ductal, but we also see invasive lobular cancer. And sometimes we see very rare cancers, such as sarcomas or cancers that come from the skin of the breast. And even there are cancers from other parts of the body that can end up in the breast, such as melanomas.
Okay. And now as a surgeon, do you treat people differently depending on the diagnosis of what kind of tumor?
Well, for the tumors that come from the breast, they're basically treated the same. There are some, the algorithms may change, but overall the treatment is the same.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are excellent. We'll go to Catherine in Glens Falls. Okay, Catherine, you're on.
Hi, doctor. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Catherine. What can I help you with?
I just had breast surgery last Wednesday, and they have this bizarre ritual where they got to put 7 needles in your breast and a wire, and I was screaming my head off. It was pain. I was begging for pain medication, and nobody listened. I told every nurse I had 2 biopsies that were horrible. And I told the anesthesiologist and the surgeon, and everybody ignored me. And I'm.
Is there a question? Is there a question here, Catherine?
Yeah. So why can't they give you something for the pain before they, with all these needles?
So, Catherine, that's a great question, and that's you're not alone in that problem. What you had done was called a needle localization surgery, and so they need to find that specific lesion. They target it with a wire, and the problem is you need to be awake when they're doing that part of the procedure because you're in a mammogram machine, so they need you to follow directions. They can use local anesthesia, but I think that what's really important nowadays is to look for hospitals that offer another type of procedure. Instead of a needle localization, you could have what's called a seed localization, so that prior to your surgery, usually the day before, an irradiated pellet is inserted into the breast where you had the biopsy. So you don't need any needles. And then on the day of surgery, there's an instrument that works much like a Geiger counter, and that's how they can find it. And you don't need to have those needles sticking out. And even better, you don't need to be, have that type of pain prior to surgery.
Is there a problem with the radioactivity?
No, that radioactivity is completely covered, and it comes out with when they do the surgery. So it's in your body less than 24 hours.
Well, Catherine, thank you very much for your call. Sorry about that pain. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dale and Cynthia are on the phone. You'd be up right after that. We're going to take a short break.
Support comes from Nathan LaTower Hospital, announcing the opening of a new dialysis center in Gloversville for renal kidney care, nlh.org. Seniors Helping Seniors, offering flexible part-time schedules to local seniors to assist other seniors to live independently, 413-822-9988. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, offering prefabricated house kits using local materials and featuring passive solar and net zero energy designs. More information at noble-home.net. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs, in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. And from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the land that protects the lake, offering more than 32 miles of trails for hiking, birding, and outdoor exploration. HikeLakeGeorge.org.
And we are back with the breast surgeon, Dr. Lida Rojas. And Lida, you were following up and saying that this procedure, which causes so much pain, has been largely replaced by something else?
Yes, it's been replaced by what's called seed localization. So rather than using a wire and a needle to localize, which actually sticks out of the patient's breast, and it has a potential for movement, the seed is placed, it's much like when they're having the biopsy, and so there's nothing protruding out of the breast.
Now, you also mentioned a few seconds ago, and we'll go back to the calls, that there are symptoms in terms of the breast being dense or whatever, that has been adopted now as one of the things you look for?
Yes. Yeah, so dense breasts do have a risk. And so New York State does have a law where women have to be informed by the radiologist that they do have dense breasts, and they have other options for further testing, which I think is really important for a woman to know about that.
Now, there are those people who take preemptive action on breast surgery and have their breasts removed. What do you make of that phenomena?
Well, there is a place for that. That's what we call prophylactic mastectomy.
Yes.
But there are certain situations where it makes sense, and a lot of times women, for emotional reasons, request that. But I think once they understand the risks involved, it really depends on what their family history is and what their history themselves are. It's not for everyone.
Have you done that?
Yes, I have.
Okay. We'll go to Dale in Canaan, New York. Okay, Dale, you're on the air. Go ahead, Dale.
Hi, thank you. I would like to ask if I've had, to start with, I've had two persons, both a wife and a daughter, who have had breast surgery for cancer. And I want to ask if there's any alternative research being done with acoustics, sound. It seems to me it would either be sound or frequency that would dissolve tumors without the, I don't want to use the word butchery, but that's what it looks like sometimes to me. That's really it. I can't tell you exactly how I got the information that technology exists, but I'm wondering if anyone is studying it, and I will listen to the response on the radio.
Stay on. They may want to ask a question. Go ahead.
Hi. All right.
Hi, Dale. That's a great question. And yes, there are treatments that are currently being investigated, and it's called cryosurgery.
So cryo?
Cryosurgery, where the tumors are being frozen. And we're actually starting to look at that first with benign tumors. So they've done some studies with fibroadenomas, which is a benign tumor of the breast. But in our last meeting at the American Society of Breast Surgeons, they have shown some promising studies showing that cryosurgery, whereas they put a small needle into the tumor and they freeze it, And they've been showing that tumors that are smaller than 1 centimeter in size, they can basically take that entire tumor out and disintegrate it.
So is this the look of the future?
They still remove it, physically remove it.
Currently, they're physically removing it because this is all still investigational. This is not something that is the standard of care, but they are definitely looking into this.
But nothing having to do with the frequency and sound dissolving the tumor without any surgery?
Not currently, but I know that in our last meeting they have been looking at that, and mainly it's with cryosurgery.
Okay.
Thank you, Dale.
Well, thank you. I just had a...
Oops, I hung up. Too bad. I wish we could have not done that. Okay, let's go to Jonathan in Sheffield. All right, Jonathan in Sheffield, you're on.
Hi. You had mentioned earlier that a woman's breast continues to develop until she has a child. So a woman that never has a child, her breast is continuing to develop?
So what I mean by develop, it has to do with cell proliferation. So when the cells are dividing, and that's when the environment can actually have an impact on the breast itself. So once your breasts are completed with development, meaning that the cells no longer divide, that's when you lower your risk.
I see. So does it matter the age at which a woman has a child to be a protective
Yes, it does. So there actually, that is part of our questions that we go through when we have a woman in the office trying to determine their risk. It has to do at what age you had your first child. And studies have shown that women who have their first child after the age of 30 have a higher risk.
I see. And so there's nothing that a woman can do other than have a child for that to be protective. I mean, obviously there's other things she can do, diet,
correct,
exercise,
correct,
things like that. But either you have a child or you don't, and there's nothing you can do to ameliorate the risk.
For that particular risk, right? I mean, it's a combination of factors. It's not just one.
So they haven't figured it out yet that sooner or later they've got to come up with, okay, it's ridiculous to think that you don't get a break unless you have a child. So somebody's going to figure that out, right? What the substitute for that might be?
Yeah, I would imagine. But I think that at this point, it's just looking at what the risk factors are and trying to reduce certain risks that you have control over. You know, for example, we're seeing a lot of young girls in our country now beginning their menstrual cycles younger. And there are some ways that you can halt that. You know, if they're more involved in sports, they're more apt to have their periods later on in life, and that's one way you can control it.
Do we know why?
I think it has to do basically with the hormone levels and steroids.
Okay, Jonathan?
Does being on birth control have any impact on that risk?
It does, but it has to do with the length of time you're on a birth control. So short-term birth control, it really does not have shown any harm in women in terms of their effects of developing breast cancer. But, you know, I see women in my practice who are in 40s and 50s and are still on birth control since they were either teenagers or young adults. And those are the women I counsel, and I'm concerned about their risk.
Is that estrogen related?
So birth control is actually an increased risk factor, not a decrease.
Overall, I would say yes, because there are other ways. You know, there are women who carry the genetic trait, the BRCA1 and 2, if you've ever heard of that. If they have that trait, sometimes they're put on birth control pills because then that'll lower their risk of ovarian cancer and at the same time lower their risk of breast cancer if they're, shutting down their ovaries. So it's not a definitive answer.
Thank you, Jonathan. Okay, we're going to now... Renee in Saratoga. Okay, Renee, you're on.
Hi, Renee.
Hi. I have a question about inflammatory breast cancer. My daughter-in-law was diagnosed with it a year ago, stage 4B. And I'm wondering why they wouldn't do surgery.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
They only
about
for
her.
Thank you.
So, in stage four means that the breast cancer has spread beyond the local area, meaning the breast and the lymph nodes. So surgery, you know, the reason we do surgery is we want to remove that tumor burden so that it doesn't spread, but this has already spread. And so there are times when if the patient, you know, gets better on chemotherapy and we want to lessen the burden, we will do a mastectomy, but it's really the chemotherapy agents that are the most beneficial to those patients.
And what is the what are the chances somebody with 4B can be cured?
Well, you can't, once you're a stage four, you can't be cured.
Sure, or, you can control.
Right, we want to control.
Yeah. Anything else on that, Renee?
So,
yeah.
So there's no, you wouldn't do surgery until it's well under control.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Renee.
Good luck, Renee.
Yep. All right. Now we're going to go to Cynthia in Plattekill. Okay, Cynthia, your turn. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank
Hi,
you for
Cynthia.
Taking my call. I have dense breasts, and they look at them with a sonogram, and they've found three things that they've measured, and like the bowel back in November.
Cynthia, Cynthia, we're having trouble hearing you. Maybe if you got a little closer to the phone or something, try again. Go ahead.
Is this better?
Yes, it is.
Good. Okay, great. So I have dense breasts that they've found three things that they've measured through a sonogram, and I'll go back in November. I never carried a child to term. I've had three miscarriages. Does that in any way help my chances of not getting breast cancer, or is that just mute?
Right. I would say it's mute. When we talk about pregnancy, it's the deliverance of the baby.
Okay.
That would lower your risk.
All right. Great. Thank you so much.
But that's great that you're getting the ultrasound, which is what you should be doing with dense breasts.
Right. It's the first time that was actually done for me. Usually it was just a painful squeeze machine. And of course, I panicked when they said they found three things that they were looking at. But then everybody said, oh, no, don't panic. It happens a lot.
Correct.
So.
What does that mean?
I'm glad to have that affirmed.
Yeah. So when you have an ultrasound, the ultrasound is different from a mammogram in that you use sound waves. And those sound waves can find things that are either fluid-filled, solid, or a combination of fluid and solid. So most of the times you can look at that and know if this is not something that you have to be concerned about. But if it's new, you want to make sure that that opinion doesn't change. So you do a six-month follow-up.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, let's see now. Let's go to Johnny in Albany. Johnny in Albany on line number 5. Welcome, Johnny.
Hi, Johnny.
Good afternoon, doctor. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I have a question about uterus cancers. My wife is getting it. This is for the third time she got it back. And this time is a stage 4. You mentioned something earlier to the gentleman about the birth control pills. My wife never took the birth control pills, but she did IVF like 5 times. And then finally I was blessed with triplets. And now she have a uterus cancer and is a stage 4. My question to you was that I have Googled a lot of other alternative medicines. Isn't it better? I mean, just the chemo himself is a $25 billion a year business, just the chemos. Isn't it better for telling you as a doctor that God gave you that kind of tools? Isn't it better to tell the people to stay away from medicines because all the medicine has a different effect? Like, and the same thing with my wife. The first question I have, is it true that the uterus cancer does cause by IVF or not? And the second, I would like you to tell the people to stay away from the medicines.
Okay, well, all right. So let's go to the doctor now. I take it, Doc, that you're not familiar with the answer to that question, right?
Correct. I mean, I do breast surgery and take care of breast cancer patients. I don't take care of GYN cancers.
And you have certainly seen situations, as I have, in which people who had cancers were cured by going to see the very doctors, which Johnny doesn't think you should go see.
Right. No, Johnny, what I would say to you is that I'm sorry to hear what happened to your wife, but chemotherapy does work. It doesn't work in everyone, and there's always a risk-benefit discussion you should have with your physician before you make that decision, and you can always decline it if that's what you believe.
And Johnny, how are the triplets doing?
They're doing fine. They're 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. I'm blessed with it. But I do believe strongly, doctor, that the pharmacist company has customers for themselves. I'm not just talking about the chemotherapy. I'm talking about the pills. I'm talking about any medicines. God bless you with a great tool in your hand and continue on doing a great job. I think it is your responsibility, all the doctors' responsibility, to tell their clients, say, listen, this medicine that you're taking has a this side effect, whether you continue on taking it or not.
Well, you have done that, right, doctor?
Yes, that's where we talk about risk-benefit, and you definitely need to know what side effects are involved, and if the doctor doesn't tell it to you, that's when you should ask.
Thank you, Johnny. Okay, and now we will go to Peter in Albany. Peter, it's your turn. Go.
Hi, Peter.
Hey, how are you? I'm a BRCA2 positive person, as is most of my family. Actually, everybody except one. My concern is my daughters, who are both positive. One is large-breasted. The other is smaller. The larger is actually working at AMC. And so I'm less concerned about her as far as screening processes. But my older daughter lives in Philly, which has a deductible of $15,000. And so she's not getting annual screenings. And so is there any way to find out something about whether or not she's, you know, in problem or.
So, Peter, how old are your daughters?
My oldest is 30.
Okay. And
my oldest is 30, and she's positive for BRCA2. And, you know, it's $2,000 for an MRI down there. And so she's. She and her fiancé haven't gotten a health care checkup in 2 years.
So what I would
Peter will listen. Go ahead.
So, Peter, what I would recommend is there are guidelines for patients who carry the BRCA1 or 2 gene, and there are hospitals that are certified by the Commission on Cancer, and I believe they should have some type of screening available to women who can't afford the screening on their own. So they should look into that. And these cancer centers have what's called nurse navigators that might be able to help them. And sometimes even the nurse navigator can find a grant that will help them pay for their screening.
Does a hospital come to mind, a particular hospital?
In Pennsylvania, no.
Okay. All right. Peter, thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much. Okay, now we'll go to Nancy in Altamont. Okay, Nancy in Altamont, you're on.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi, thank you. I had a supracervical hysterectomy at age 47. Okay, I'm now 65. Last year on a whim, I went in and got tested for BRCA because I'm an Ashkenazi Jew, and I was positive for BRCA1. I have nothing. I mean, I'm fine. I'm being monitored. I go annually either for the MRI or and I do the breast exams. Mm-hmm. I also have daughters, though. Okay, so now I know the BRCA1 is a genetic mutation. Is there any other gene that is actually working in my favor? You know, again, I had a late hysterectomy. I was 47, and that I know reduces the significantly the chance of breast cancer and the ovarian cancer in BRCA1. Is there any other gene that's like particular to the Ashkenazi Jews that also protects them?
There's not a gene that I know of that protects you, but you know, not everybody who has the BRCA1 or 2 gene will get breast cancer. It's just a higher risk. So there are guidelines that your daughters should follow, and they're put out by what's called the NCCN. That's a National Cancer Consortium Network. You can find that online. And that will give you specific guidelines for your girls to look and see when they should be tested and screened.
Okay. Can I just follow up? I had the hysterectomy, and now they're doing a procedure where they just remove fallopian tubes, and I don't know if this is in your expertise or not, to reduce so that young women do not have to have hysterectomies, although they still recommend the hysterectomies by a certain age. Do you know if the removal of the fallopian tubes it also reduces, in addition to the ovarian cancer, anything with the breast cancer?
No. Again, I'm not a gynecologist, but from what I understand, the fallopian tubes are removed because they found that some of these ovarian cancers had gone up into the fallopian tubes.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Gotta go. Thanks again.
All right,
again.
Thank you.
Bye, Nancy.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back coming around the bend.
Support comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Gear Village, a senior community where one can age in a supportive environment at all stages of life. GearVillage.org for information. Culligan Water of the Northeast for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work. CulliganNortheast.com. Saratoga Hospital, introducing the Addiction Medicine Program at the Saratoga Community Health Center, a dedicated team of medical, behavioral, health, and social work professionals. And from Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley, we conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org.
And we are back, and we are delighted to have Dr. Lida Rojas here with us today. She's terrific, as you can hear, really knows her stuff, and we'll take some more calls. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Linda in Corinth. Okay, Linda in Corinth, you're on.
Hi, I'm calling to ask about breast reduction. Is there a problems with having that done? I've never had any cosmetic kind of surgery before, and I want to make sure that I'm putting myself in more danger.
So, Linda, when you talk about problem with having that done, are you referring to your risk of breast cancer?
Yes.
So
or
no.
Anything. I mean,
right.
have they found out that women that have a breast reduction have any particular problems with anything in particular?
No, I think that breast reduction in for certain women is the right thing to do. If you have very large breasts and you have back pain and shoulder pain, that's certainly going to help your overall health. And there's not any added risk in doing that procedure in terms of follow-up testing and or risk of developing a cancer.
So if I can jump in, is there a greater risk if you have larger or smaller breasts?
No, it has to do with the density of your breast.
I see. Okay, back to you, Linda. Okay. Anything you got? Anything else on this?
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye bye.
Good luck.
All right, and now to Johanna. Yep, in South Hadley, Massachusetts. All right, Johanna, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. I'm wondering if you have heard about the radio wave therapy that's being done over at Clinic St. George in Germany. I had a cousin who was treated, and if you're not familiar with it, I can give you a little information because it was astonishingly successful.
And the radio wave therapy was for what treatment?
She was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer here in the United States and basically told she only had months to live, and she decided to go to Europe and be treated No chemo, no radiation, just this radiowave technology.
Oh, that's I am not familiar with that.
Well, it's something maybe should be explored more here. After the treatment, she lived there a month and received nutritional support and then the radiowave technology treatments. And then her PET scan went from being completely full of cancer to being cancer-free. And she lived another 6 years cancer-free, got one tumor back, was treated again, and was basically cancer-free for another couple of years, and then everything went sharply downhill. But the fact that she really received an extra 10 years of life...
That's great.
...was extraordinary.
Yeah, that is extraordinary.
Just in case you want to look it up...
Sure, thank you.
K-L-I-N-I-K, St. George, G-E-O-R-G, in Germany.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for that.
Very welcome. Bye-bye.
And we'll go to Phyllis in Hillsdale. Ladies and gentlemen, you got a chance to get in here now. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Over to Phyllis in Hillsdale. All right, Phyllis, you're on.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Okay. I had a lumpectomy, and I was there was nothing in the lymph nodes or anything. And they wanted to still do radiation and this hormone therapy. And I'm concerned because in the left breast, which is where the heart is, I have a lot of concerns about doing this radiation. I went on John Hopkins' website, and because I'm in my 70s, they indicated that probably I didn't have to do the radiation, and I'd like your thoughts on this.
Sure. So do you know what stage your cancer
one,
was in?
One.
This is stage one.
Nothing in the margins, nothing.
And what the hormone receptor status is? Is it estrogen positive?
It was
positive?
Good. What was it?
Estrogen positive?
Yeah, I think that's what John Hopkins, when I gave him the whole thing, they said you shouldn't have to do this.
Right. So if you have stage one, it's hormone receptor positive,
right,
and
your
margins were clear and you're over the age of 70?
Right.
Do you know what kind of grade the tumor was? Was it an aggressive type?
It was the invasive ductal.
Right. Did they give it a grade, 1, 2, or 3?
I don't recall that.
Okay. So you're right. For women over the age of 70, if you go on a website called nccn.org, Guidelines for Patients, women over the age of 70, they do not necessarily require radiation. There are some types of tumors that if they're considered aggressive, they might recommend that.
So what about this heart issue with the left breast and radiation?
So that actually is very rare nowadays because of the type of radiation that's given. They've really perfected it. And most women will get radiation in what's called the prone position so that their head is facing down and the breast is pulled away from the heart.
That, yes.
So that has actually improved that risk of the heart being hurt by the radiation.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
1-800-348-2551. We'll go to... we're going to go to Laura in Northampton. Okay, Laura, you're on.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, thank you so much. My mom had bilateral cancer, two different kinds, one in each breast. One was more invasive. They did a bilateral mastectomy. She's 5+ years. She's good. But I wondered how common that was and if there was a greater risk of inheriting that.
Sure. So it's not common. One of the questions you might want to ask your mom, though, was she referred to see a genetic counselor because of the bilateral breast cancer?
Bilateral meaning in both breasts?
I don't.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay, so she might want to speak to her doctor about being referred to a genetic counselor to see if she meets criteria for testing, which may help you in know what your risks are.
Okay, all right. That's cool. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye. Okay, now we're going to go to Sharon in the Catskills. Okay, Sharon in the Catskills, you're on.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Sharon.
You know, the earlier caller said that when she was having that wire put into the tumor, it hurt like crazy, and she wanted to know why they couldn't numb her up. My question is, when I was having my biopsy, the doctor was screaming at the tech, you know, it was on some screen, in the, you know, that they were monitoring. The doctor starts screaming at the tech, why can't I get in? And she was trying to give me Novocaine. She goes, am I hitting bone? And it was so brutal. Okay, so they end up doing the biopsy, and I had cancer. And the day of surgery, they would put the wire in, but it was a different person doing it. And I said to them, I said, oh, my God, I'm going to go through this again. And it wasn't that bad. My question is to you, when they do the biopsy, is it possible to put someone under general so they don't feel it? I have very dense breasts. Is it possible to put him under? And my second question is, after surgery, I was told to see a medical oncologist. And I don't want to name the universities or the places. They're both world-renowned. And one told me I needed chemo, and the other told me I didn't. And I was wondering how two world-renowned places could have a completely 100% difference in opinion on do I need chemo or not. That's my two questions. I don't know if the second one is more medical oncology, and that's not your field, because the breast surgeon referred me on to the medical oncologist. But the first one was also, again, because they got the cancer back, since it was so brutal, the biopsy. I mean, it was really brutal. Can they put you under general for the biopsy?
Okay, so we got the question. Now we'll get an answer.
Sure. So general surgery is generally not needed for breast biopsies. One is general anesthesia itself has its own risks. Two is I don't think that your insurance company would cover general anesthesia for a breast biopsy. I think it done in the right hands and the right circumstances using the right type of local anesthetic, it can never eliminate pain 100%, but it should make it a lot more easier for you going through the biopsy. So I have done general anesthesia extremely rarely for women who actually couldn't take a local anesthetic because they had allergies to it, but it's not really the standard of care.
Okay. I want to just say, from a man's point of view, I've had prostate biopsies, and they hurt too.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had root canal without Novocaine. I've had EMG tests, and it didn't hurt anything as bad as that biopsy.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
So yeah, no, you're not alone, and hopefully one day we'll get to the point where it's painless.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Okay, it also.
Okay, thank you. Okay, now we'll go to, let's see here, Sherry in South Egremont. Okay, Sherry, your turn.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. One is I wanted the doctor to go through the medication she said was released a month ago. And I think it was HR2, but I'm not sure. And because I have a niece that just had a double mastectomy after she went through 6 months of chemo, then she had the mastectomy, and now she's going to go through another 6 months. And my second question is I'm 71. I have very dense breasts still. My mother died of metastasized breast cancer at 51. Should I be getting an MRI for my breast? Should I be getting, because I've only done the machine, the mammogram.
Sherry, can you repeat your first question for me again?
Yes, you said about new medication that was released a month ago.
What's the name?
I'd like you to go over that again.
Sure. So the name of that medication is neratinib. It's NERATNIB. That specifically targets women who have HER2 new positive breast cancers. Do you know if that's what your niece had?
No, but I'll ask her. HER2 new.
New. So it's her as H-E-R, the number 2, and then N-E-U, HER2-new. It's a type of protein receptor that is on certain cancers.
Okay. I'll ask her about that. And then my second question was, I'm 71. I have dense breasts. I've never been, I've only ever had the mammogram. Should I be getting an MRI? Should I be getting ultrasound to determine? My mother died of breast cancer at 50.
Sure. What I would recommend you do is what's called a risk assessment. And there is a risk assessment that you could actually access online. It's called the Tyer-Cuzick model. That's T-Y-E-R-C-U-Z-I-K. And you fill in personal information such as your age, your first menstrual cycle, how old you were when you had your first child, your family history, how dense your breasts are on the mammogram, and it will come up with a number, and that number will tell you if you're high risk. So any woman who has a lifetime risk greater than or equal to 20% should be screened more rigorously than a mammogram.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much for your information.
You're
I really appreciate the program.
Yep. Bye. Okay, we'll go now to Sandy in Burlington. Sandy in Burlington, you're on.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
We can. Can you hear us?
I can, yes. Thank you. I have a question about mammograms, too. This is probably a really easy one. I'm 59, and it seems like every few years, or maybe even more frequently, the recommendations for how often to have a mammogram change. Wondering what the doctor might recommend for a healthy person who's 59. The only risk factor I have is that my aunt did have breast cancer, but I'm pretty sure it was mostly environmental based on her lifestyle.
Sure.
Hold on, Sandy. We're going to get an answer for you.
Sandy, once, I don't know if you heard my last caller talking about risk assessment. If you have average risk, and you can do that assessment on your own online, but if your average risk, meaning that you have a less than 15% chance of developing breast cancer, the American Society of Breast Surgeons has put out recommendations for mammograms. And currently, between the ages of 40 and 44, you should talk to your medical doctor as to whether or not you should start screening at that age. Between 45 and 55, it's an annual screening. And then between 55 and 75, it could be every other year, depending on your risk.
Okay, great.
I hope that answers that.
Thank you, Sandy. Oh, no, I think I messed up that name. Let's go to Sandy in Columbia County. Okay, Sandy, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling about reconstructive surgery. I had a mastectomy 12 years ago and had the TRAM type of reconstructive surgery. It's transrectus abdominis muscle,
yes.
I believe is what that stands for.
Exactly.
And I'm calling to ask if you would still recommend that type of surgery. Are they still doing it? Because I think I've had some problems with it that maybe weren't anticipated.
So, yes, TRAM-flap reconstruction is still being done. There are problems with any type of reconstruction. And I think what happened with the TRAM flap reconstruction had to do with women over time, the TRAM itself kind of shrunk.
And what's a TRAM?
So a TRAM is taking the muscle from your abdomen. That's called rectus. So it's transrectus abdominis muscle flap. So they're dividing the muscle in your abdomen and keeping it attached to its blood supply, but bringing it up into the breast as a form of reconstruction.
Now, you don't do that, right? That's a plastic surgeon.
No, that's done by the plastic surgeon.
Right.
So, yes, TRAM flaps are still being done. There, in any type of reconstruction, there can be issues. What we found mostly with TRAMs is that they over time can shrink.
Okay,
thank you very
Sandy,
much.
Thank you. Okay, this will be our last call from Ed in Accord, New York. Okay, Ed in Accord, New York, you're on.
Oh, hi, Alan. Yeah, my late partner had breast cancer a few years ago and went to the Bahamas for laser immunotherapy, which involved a laser and a few shots. And she went in around February, March, and she went for a PET scan at River Radiology in Kingston in August, and they said, it's gone. The breast cancer's gone. And unfortunately, she thought she was out of the woods totally and maybe was a little lax on the guidelines, and it came back into her liver the same year they had the Chipotle restaurant scare, and she thought she had Chipotle poisoning. But it was liver cancer, and it was the breast cancer had gone back into the liver. But it seemed like the laser therapy made it completely go away, at least at first.
Okay, now you got to
stop there. I'm wondering if that's happening here, or what.
Ed, you got to stop there because we're running out of time here. Doctor.
Hi, Ed. So immunotherapy is happening in our country. I'm not familiar with laser immunotherapy, but I do think that that's in the forefront for treating part of what we call targeted therapy.
Okay.
Thank you.
I hope they allow some of these alternative therapies, like the woman that had gone to Germany. It seems like the cancer industry doesn't like too much change.
Well, but I think that what we basically do in our country that may be different from other countries is we practice evidence-based medicine. So there has to be trials where we can prove that something works, not just based on one patient.
Thanks, Ed. Okay, we are out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. And thank you especially to Helen, who was left on the phone. We're so sorry. Thanks to Dr. Lida Rojas of Care Mount Medical Group and Putnam Hospital Center for joining us today. Support for the Medical Monday comes from New York Oncology Hematology, announcing Ask the Expert event about BRCA diagnosis Monday, August 14th at 6 p.m. in conjunction with the American Cancer Society and D's Kids. NewYorkOncology.com for information. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones today. Our producers, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Again, Dr. Lida Rojas, thank you so much. Thanks for listening, everybody. And stay tuned now for a news update.